Good morning. We will bring the December 7th, 2022 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District to order. We always begin our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. If I could ask everyone to stand and face the flag. Please join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. This time I'd ask the Board Secretary to read the procedures for attending our meeting virtually and to call the roll of the Board of Directors.
I will review the EMWD guidelines for virtual participation, and they are the following. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. And I will do roll call. President Pauley?
Present.
Director Record?
Here.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
And our legal counsel is present.
And Director Slauson is joining us virtually this morning. This time, I understand the Board Secretary, yesterday the Board of Supervisors of Riverside County ratified the November 8th election results. With that, we have myself, Director Slauson, and Director Corona were reelected to another four-year term that will take us through, I believe, December 4th, 2026. At this time, we will do the swearing-in ceremony. With Director Slauson being virtual, I'd like to ask legal counsel that we are on solid legal grounds to swear Director Slauson in virtually this morning, correct?
There is no problem with that, Chair.
Very good. With that, I will ask the Board Secretary to go to the podium, and if the other directors, Director Corona, could join me in the well.
Directors, please raise your right hand. Do you, Stephen J. Corona, Philip E. Pauley, and David J. Slauson solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California, that you take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation on purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which you are about to enter?
I do.
Please join me in welcoming Eastern Municipal Water District's board members.
I will note I've been to a lot of swearing-ins. I think that is the first one that we ever were able to do virtually. So congratulations, Director Slauson. Very good. With that, we will do public comment. Is there anyone here wishing to make a comment on an item not on today's agenda? That, I see none. We have a public hearing this morning. This is the time and place set for the public hearing regarding establishment of the Los Alamos Hills Water System Financing Program for annexation costs and connection fees for financing participants. I declare this public hearing open and would like to ask staff on a report for the proposed item. Good morning, Thomas.
Morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Today's public hearing was set by this board of directors at its last board meeting, which was held on November 16, 2022. This public hearing was scheduled to provide an opportunity for the community to provide public comment on the Los Alamos Hills Water System Financing Program. The City of Murrieta had previously reached out to EMWD to explore the possibility of extending EMWD's water system to a community known as Los Alamos Hills. In support of the water system extension, the city committed to contributing $3 million in ARPA funding for the project. An interagency agreement was approved by the EMWD board in July, followed by Murrieta's City Council in August. Colored in yellow on the map to the right are the 50 properties identified as being eligible to connect to the looped water system being designed to serve this community. For properties to connect and receive water service from EMWD, a dual annexation process is required to annex into the Metropolitan Water District and the Eastern Municipal Water District service areas. EMWD is prepared to lead the initial annexation process and cover the processing fees, which are estimated at approximately $19,000. The district has experience navigating this somewhat administratively complex process and is prepared to leverage its resources to make the process efficient, removing this burden from property owners in the community. The annexation area will ultimately be determined by the level of community support and will be presented to the Board of Directors for consideration in March of 2023. It's important to note that any properties in protest of being annexed will be excluded from the process, and if they choose to annex at a later time, it would be done without EMWD leading the process and covering the application fees. Now, to assist property owners with the financing of the annexation and connection costs, staff developed a financing program with the community in mind. The main provisions include up to a 30-year term, a 4% fixed interest rate, collecting the payments via property tax assessments annually, and deferring the start of the assessments until the 2024-2025 tax year. Participation in the financing program is completely voluntary, but will only be available to those participants who have signed agreements with EMWD. For illustration purposes, the table at the bottom shows the various components and estimates based on estimated acreage sizes. The average parcel size in this community is roughly 3 acres, but there are several parcels smaller and larger than the average. The amounts in the table reflect estimated 2024 rates. These serve as a maximum not to exceed amount, and once the final costs are calculated, a true-up will occur and staff will provide property owners with updated amortization schedules where reductions occur. Now, a multi-agency partnership teaming together on a project serving to benefit an important part of the community requires proactive and effective community outreach with accurate information. Letters have been drafted in a prompt manner when accurate information was confirmed and available to be shared with the community. A town hall meeting was also scheduled at the local clubhouse to provide members of the community an opportunity to meet in person with the team and hear more about the partnership between the city and EMWD, the proposed project and its benefits. It was also a great opportunity for the city and EMWD to meet with property owners and hear about the needs and concerns of the community. At the November 16th board meeting, the board approved the draft financing agreements and set the date for today's public hearing. Following the board meeting, staff worked with two local newspapers to get the public notices drafted and scheduled for publication. Once that was confirmed, letters were also drafted and mailed via certified mail informing residents of the public hearing. Draft financing agreements with property-specific information were also mailed to each property owner for review ahead of today's meeting. And a notary signing event has been scheduled for December 13th. Information for this event was also included in the letter informing the public of the public hearing, as well as the cover letter included with the financing agreements. I'd like to point out a notary public is also available here at the main office for any property owners unable to make it to the signing event. Now, I know many of the members of the community are here today to speak on this item, so I'll wrap this up here shortly. Just want to mention a couple key points as far as the schedule goes. Signed agreements need to be received by EMWD by December 16th, And the annexation process will begin in February and considered by the board in March, as I referenced just a few slides ago. Project design is expected to be completed by June of 2023, with the construction bid and contract award in September of 2023. Prior to any assessments being levied, another public hearing will be scheduled and properly noticed in 2024. Now, several of these steps require a future board action and will be scheduled accordingly. Staff's recommendation is for the board to adopt the proposed resolution to establish the Los Alamos Hills Water System Financing Program for financing annexation and connection costs for financing participants, as well as authorize the general manager to execute the financing agreements with property owners on behalf of the district. I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions or provide clarification on any of the information presented.
Are there any questions for staff at this time? Thank you very much, Thomas. This time I'd like to ask the board secretary how this hearing was noticed.
The notice of the public hearing was published in the Californian on November 22, 2022, and in the Press Enterprise on November 24, 2022. The notice of the public hearing was also mailed out on November 22, 2022, via certified mail to the legal mailing addresses on file with the County of Riverside for 50 properties located in the Los Alamos Hills community.
If the board secretary has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd like to ask her to provide those copies to the board at this time.
When comment letter in support of the project has been received and no written protest to the proposal.
Thank you. At this time, I understand there are members of the public that wish to speak on their matter, on this matter. Please be sure to fill out a speaker's card. For those that have already filled out a speaker's card, as your name is called, please come forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and present your comments. We give people 3 minutes, and we will have a timer up on the screen there for you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in this hearing by phone, I'd like to ask if any members of the public who would like to comment on this item via phone be able to do so. Do we have anyone on the phone for this?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. With that, we will have our public comment. The first person be Mr. Ivan Haller from the City of Murrieta, sir.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My name is Ivan Haller. I'm the Assistant City Manager with the City of Murrieta. And on the city side, I'm the lead on this project. I am here to speak unequivocally in support of this. Our city council unanimously adopted the expenditure of ARPA funds towards this project, and we are pleased to partner with Eastern Municipal Water District on this to provide municipal water service to the properties that you saw indicated on the slide earlier. This truly is a unique opportunity. One, we have ARPA funding available. That's something that we probably will never see again. And so to take advantage of this opportunity to provide a reliable water supply for property owners in this area, I think is something that certainly we are pleased to do, and I would encourage you as a board to take the same position on that. I'm happy to answer any other questions that your board may have, but again, I'm here to speak in support of the project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Lisa Long, and I understand you wish to donate your time to Mr. Alan Long. Is that correct? Okay. With that, then I will ask Mr. Alan Long if he would like to speak. And with the donated 3 minutes, you will have 6 minutes, sir.
Thank you, President Pauley and board members. I believe there was one other speaker.
Is that Mr. Dan Long that would like to donate time?
And Mike Longmo.
Okay. So we will that will give you, I believe, 12 minutes.
Thank you, President. So I'm here on behalf of a lot of my neighbors in the Los Alamos District, and really what I'm here for is to make a few points of clarification and speak on in favor of the project. Your last meeting, there were some statements made that I think need to be clarified. Now, first, I want to say I respect everyone's opinion. I respect everyone's choice. This is a free country. It's not perfect, but it's a great country to live in, and it gives us the right to have the freedom to choose. But we also have the right to facts, and you have a big decision in front of you. I can tell you majority of the neighbors are thankful for this opportunity. As Mr. Haller said, it doesn't come frequently, and this is a unique opportunity that our city and community has in front of them. One of the statements that was made by an individual says that they weren't ever invited to meetings and they weren't invited to talk about this, pointing to your board, and that this was the first they had heard about it. And that may very well be. I can't speak to that individual's history, but what I can say is this is not new. The city had 6 meetings that I can count specifically on ARPA funds. Infrastructure needs have been identified in our area since 2005. A formal letter was written when wells started to dry up in 2005. The city adopted a general plan, and the city adopted goals. The city council goals is to provide and create infrastructure in areas it doesn't. In fact, in Chapter 6 of the general plan, it identifies over 24 policies and goals to get us infrastructure into these areas. Those didn't happen overnight. The general plan had a series of meetings, public hearings. There were 6 public hearings on ARPA funds. There were 2 community meetings in our neighborhood regarding ARPA funds and water specifically in our area. These were held at private residence and the Alderwood Community Center, all of which were publicly notified. So to say that this was the first anyone heard about it, that may be, but it certainly wasn't because there wasn't an outreach. I'd like to commend Roxanne, your public relations manager, who did a tremendous job. I thought I was the only one that did it old school and went door-to-door with flyers because we sent out emails, texts, phone messages, but we were afraid that maybe not everyone heard, so we actually went door-to-door, and I saw Roxanne going door-to-door, and I spoke to many of my neighbors. One of the things I think is important that we're very respectful. Our community knows that we're just one enclave within a city that has many needs. And in 2005, we decided to do a specific plan because we finally realized, I think, Mr. Corona, I think you pointed out last meeting that you're amazed at how many people don't understand how we get water and roads built in cities. And our community didn't at first. We voted for cityhood, and there were many that thought, oh, we become a city, and the city builds roads and water. Well, we were in for a rude awakening. And we lived in an area that's called Los Alamos District. It's rural residential. And we soon found out that we needed to pay for water ourselves. There was no development at the end of our road to bring water in. So we started designing the specific plan. And in that specific plan, it identified all the potential lots and how the cost could be divided within those lots. And what happened was we were nearly finished, and along comes the MSHCP, which many of you know what that is. That annihilated most of the lots and put land in conservation, which is a good thing as well. But what it did is it made it infeasible for us to subdivide the cost for infrastructure for our area. It also increased the fire load dramatically. And most recently, we experienced a Liberty Fire in that conservation area where there's no vegetation management plan. And we've seen 2 homes lost due to fire. One, because the fire actually started on the outside of the home, and it was a complete loss because the hydrant was over a quarter mile away. This is what led to the most recent request for using these ARPA funds in our community. There was another statement made that said, we're on wells and we're doing fine. We don't need it. I can assure you, I had a PowerPoint presentation. I'm unable to show you the visual aid, but a good majority of the lots identified in the map that you've shown have had wells that have dried up, new wells that were attempted to be drilled and did not hit any water. And there are over dozens of people currently that have to have water hauled in today. What I also found out, and this is in public testimony on October 29th and on May 22nd, when the public was invited to the city council meeting to speak on this specific project, I learned that some of our neighbors have unpotable water from their wells. The nitrate levels are double the EPA standard. Their children can't take showers because there's no water. I had a family of five with four teenagers that gave testimony that they couldn't flush their toilets. There's a public health issue going on as well. I didn't know about some of that stuff. The need was even greater, and my eyes were opened even more once I heard the public testimony on the public health and safety side. We're on septics out there. The reason that the nitrates are high is from a number of reasons. Could be from fertilization, could be from septic systems, could be from all of that. We're on 2.5 acre minimum, and we're on septic tanks. I think the health standard is a 10 acre to be sustainable. So that's another problem in the future that we'll probably need funding for. I want to end with this. Like I said, your staff report was well done. It's a choice. It's a choice. You don't have to be involved in this program. If you don't want water and you don't want to take advantage of this program that EMWD has graciously went out of their way to do for our residents, you don't have to do it. But allow others who truly need it and are in dire need. Remember, this isn't about a quality of life. It's not a quality of life issue. It's before quality of life. This is about life. This is the bare necessity that people need water to have sustainable livelihood and raise their families. People all gave testimony that they loved the area they live in, but they need water. They need water desperately. There was also a bit of a conspiracy theory asked of you as to why there's something else going on. There was a mention of someone wanted to build apartments in our area. Well, someone may want to do that, but there's tremendous hurdles for them to go through. First, we're rural residential. There's a series of other hearings for that to take place. And then I was even mentioned personally. I'm not in this program. Unfortunately, I wish I would. I wish I was. I wish I could take advantage of this. I had to pay my fees up front. I did not have the ability to take advantage of what you are offering my neighbors who desperately need this. And I hope they could. In fact, the reason I went door to door, the reason I'm still staying involved, two reasons. One, I was fearful that a neighbor would not know about this opportunity and it would pass them by, and a year later they would say, I never knew about it. Because this doesn't come often. The funding that we're getting from the city doesn't come often. We'll probably never see that again, as Mr. Haller said. And the program you are providing the residents without them having to do anything is unheard of. I've been an appointed public official, an elected official for 17 years, and I've never seen anything like it. My fear was that someone would miss the opportunity. That's why I went door to door to make sure everyone knew, including the speaker who said this. I spoke to them individually and handed them a flyer, told them about the two next meetings that were coming, and didn't show up. So why am I doing this? The second reason I said, there's a lady sitting in the audience, her family, the Quirrezes. Probably about 20 years ago, her well went dry. Lives on the same road as the speaker I'm referring to. They had to try to drill a new well, couldn't hit water, drilled a third well, hit a gallon a minute, barely enough to get by. And I promised that family that I would help them in any way I can to bring water to their home and to our community, that I kept hearing about wells being dry. So that's what I do. I made a promise to someone. Would I hook up? I don't apologize for that. If water came, I would absolutely try to do everything I could to hook up. I can't take advantage of this program, but I would pay my fees up front because I know the value of it. Do I need it? No. I've got 8 wells. 3 do extremely well. I don't even use the others because they do so well. I'm fortunate. Those wells are on the south side of the Hogbacks. The EIR they did for the Diamond Valley Reservoir, as you guys may have read, they had to study the groundwater tables in our area. We're dependent on percolation. The Hogbacks act as sort of a dam from Warm Springs Creek percolating over. Those closest to the foothill have it worst, and that's where this area sits. The water doesn't percolate. The more development that happens and the more we pave over, doesn't hit the ground and percolate down to our water table. And so our situation is bad now, and it's going to get worse. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Long. Our next speaker will be Mr. Frank Mann. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm Frank Mann. I live at 37500 Los Alamos Road in Marietta. I'm here to speak in favor of getting water. This morning when I took a shower, I'm looking forward to the day I don't have to use my well any longer. We've been there 20 years. We're on a shallow well, 150 feet deep. When we bought it, we wanted a well inspector to come out and pull the pump and check it, and he said, don't you dare. Wait till it quits because it's an old well as it is. Well, 20 years, it's still working. But the problem is it's now failing in the summer. I have to haul water in. I had to put a 5,000-gallon storage tank and a booster pump on to bring the water in and go. In those months when we need the water, we have to bring it in. And it can be $400 to $600 a month to haul water in when it's dry. Fire prevention is something that is important to our community, and it's particularly important to us. It's more than a quarter mile, probably half mile, to the nearest fire hydrant. And 2 years ago in March of 2020, my neighbor's home burned to the ground as 13 fire trucks sat in my front yard, the street, and their house with no water. They had brought water in a truck. It had played out. They couldn't get enough water, and it was fully engaged, and they couldn't put it out. So we look forward to fire prevention needs there. The last thing I want to say is thank you for your participation and your sponsorship of this program and the city. There's been outstanding communication to me, to my property. I've had aware of the city council actions from last summer, emails I've received from Roxanne, who's been great at communicating, coming out to meetings. There's public meetings, and your staff has been there. We had a meeting a month and a half ago where two of your board members were out there and actually spoke to me. I had some questions. Your director was there. Everybody answered all my questions. 10 years ago when we looked at this, I was going to have to cap my well. I had to give up my water rights. There were all sorts of other things. All of those impediments seem to be gone in this one, and you've even provided a funding mechanism. So thank you for that. I've had two different people knock on my door and hand me flyers to make sure I knew about what was going on. Word of mouth from different neighbors and letters. General letters your district has sent me. Registered letters that I've had to sign for. So I've gotten plenty of information on it, and we're looking forward to it going. The last thing is your webpage. I don't know if you get comments about how great your webpage is, but all the information from all the meetings is on your webpage. All the maps are there. My house is there. I can see where the lines are going to run and what goes on. So thank you for the great communication.
Thank you, sir, for your comments. Next, we'll have Mr. Jerry Dex, please.
Good morning, President Pauley, Board of Directors. Thanks for having the meeting. Just want to let you know our situation. We bought our property in 2010. We have about a 200-foot well that produces a gallon a minute, which is just barely enough to put a home on our site. So, of course, we knew we had to drill a well at some point. So in 2019, we drilled a 1,000-foot well on our property and did not hit water. So we panicked. Of course, what's a property in that neighborhood worth without water? Not very much. So we decided to drill again. 2020, we drilled a 750-foot well, and we got 4 gallons a minute. Of course, I was hoping for 10 or 15, but we didn't quite get that amount. And I've looked at well completion rates around that area, and there are people getting a lot more water than we get. But since we're on the one side of the hogbacks, we certainly ran up against that impediment. So we're looking at four, but with the advent of the water proposition throughout this year, and we've known about this, we've been to a couple different meetings, we're really excited knowing that we'll have city water and won't have to rely on a 4 gallon a minute well. So we're grateful to the city and to EMWD and also Alan Long and many of the other people here to get this movement going, and we are excited to have this. We've signed up. We're ready to go. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your comments. Next, we'll have Teresa Morrow, please. All right. Please, sir.
Thank you. Bob Landwehr, 27961 Sawyer Road. The city has dedicated $10.6 million in ARPA funds for water and sewer projects. Why is the district requiring parcel owners to pay annexation costs when those costs are covered by ARPA funds? I'm reading from the second paragraph at the city council agenda from August 16th. Around September of 2021, City staff met with representatives from Eastern Municipal Water District to begin discussions about providing water infrastructure to a portion of the Los Alamos area. That's when community outreach is supposed to take place. That's when we're supposed to get a scoping letter about a town hall meeting, about a workshop, just like what happened when they developed the park, when they talked about developing our specific plan for the hogbacks. We got a notice. We all voiced our opinion. That notice is required per, or excuse me, public participation is required per 15201 of the CEQA. Public participation is an essential part of the CEQA process. Each public agency should include provisions in the CEQA procedures for wide public involvement, formal and informal, consistent with its existing activities and procedures. The reason that is there is to begin to determine the meaningful information to satisfy CEQA. This was read at the hearing on August 16th by Councilmember Christy White. I'm quoting, it's in the agenda. As currently proposed, 49 adjacent parcels could benefit from the installation of water line loop that would connect to the existing EMDW infrastructure on Ruth Ellen Way. However, this area is not currently with EMWD's district boundaries. Thus, to connect to the future water line, each property would first need to annex into the Metropolitan Water District and EMWD. Fortunately, annexation costs are eligible for funding through ARPA. Let me repeat that. Annexation costs are eligible for funding through ARPA. That wasn't refuted by anyone at the hearing. No one refuted that. If you look at the resolution that was passed that day, Resolution 22-4604, it doesn't say otherwise. ARPA funds will cover annexation fees. If you look at the city, interagency financial contribution statement, whereas the city warrants that it shall contribute a minimum of $3 million toward such construction cost and shall endeavor to identify and contribute other potential sources in funding received or otherwise made for the district cost, fees, and expenses incurred in connection with the district's construction of said water infrastructure. In January of 2018, the city passed Measure T, a one-cent sales tax for public safety, specifically to improve fire protection. We've heard about the fires. I can tell you specifically about Ted and Kathy's house burned down. I watched it. I'm the one that called them. I watched the hose lines start at Rail Ranch, and it took 25 minutes, 30 minutes before those lines became energized. I recognized the need for fire hydrants. I recognized the need for this program. But annexation costs are covered by ARPA. Mr. Paul, you were there at the hearing, and before this topic came up, I'm referring to the August 16th hearing, the city went over its independent audit report, and it got high marks for 2021, top rating from the independent auditor. It had expenditures and transfers of $71 million and revenues of $93. It gained $22 million. The money is there. Assistant City Manager Ivan Haller spoke about, at the same hearing, Drinking Water State Revolving Fund Eligibility Handbook. This is what I have in my hand. This is evidently green lights to ARPA funding for this project. Page 10, example projects, new water main extensions to serve existing residents not served by a safe supply of potable water. It qualifies. If you continue on in the same handbook, on page 50, examples of water efficiency projects. Installing any type of water meter in previously unmetered areas, if the rate structure are based on metered use, can include backflow prevention device if installed in conjunction with the water meter. That's what ARPA fees can pay for. Why are we being taxed?
Sir, if I could, your time and donated time are just about up here, so if you could wrap it up.
Can I get another member? Thank you.
So, Mr. Kessler, you're donating your 3 minutes?
Correct.
All right.
So, I never got a letter, a notice about your July 6th meeting about the funding of this. I should. This project affects me. I should be able to come to you and say, wait, it does. It affects all 50. We all should have got a letter saying, hey, we're having a meeting on this specific topic. I never got one. Same thing with the August 16th meeting. I never got one. This part of the CEQA process. Ted and Kathy, they're retired. Claude, he's retired. We're retired. Scott's retired. Kenny and Gina are retired. Rico and Eva are retired. Those are my neighbors. I get along good with my neighbors. I think I do. But when you're in your 60s, 70s, and 80s, you shouldn't be incurring a $50,000 hit for a fire hydrant and a water line. We shouldn't be passing those expenses on to our kids for them to deal with when the taxes have already been collected for it and there's money to pay for it. If you were to listen to that same hearing, I heard this comment. Committed to move it forward aggressively and can find creative ways to move it forward rapidly. We get a one-day notice. The letter comes out October. It's dated October 11th. We get it October 12th. And we get a one-day notice. And the decision has already been made how it's going to be paid for. And we don't have the right to go to my city leaders, the city council, and say, I want to be at that hearing. I want to tell them, wait, the money is there. You said it. I don't want to get hit with $50,000 for this. And we're a small parcel. What do the other people have to pay? The taxes have already been collected for it. I would have much rather heard the statement at the city council meeting, something to the effect like this. We're committed to this public safety health issue and can find creative ways to fund this project with the tax dollars already collected and dedicated for this purpose. Why do we have to pay for the annexation fees when ARPA funds cover them? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I have no other speaker cards. Is there anybody else here that would like to speak during the public hearing? Seeing none, I'm going to declare the public hearing closed. I would like to ask the general manager. We had a couple of, would you like to clarify anything on behalf of the district?
Sure. Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. Appreciate all the public comments made this morning. Wanted to clarify a couple of points. There was a mention regarding the ARPA funding, and I just want to clarify. The funding agreement between EMWD and the city is for $3 million of ARPA funding. Our preliminary cost estimate for planning, design, and construction of the water system for Los Alamos Hills is estimated at $3.2 million. Thus, the $200,000 above and beyond the $3 million will be covered by EMWD. Now, that doesn't include the annexation cost or the connection fees. That's what this financing mechanism is for. So just to be clear, what the current arrangement is with the city is for $3 million. The design construction is estimated to be above that. And I just wanted to make that point. I think the figures that were referred to earlier relative to the 10.5, those were for additional projects that the city is funding within the communities, other communities within the city. There was reference to CEQA. And I just want to be clear, as shown on the presentation that Thomas provided to the board earlier on the slide that talks about schedule, CEQA process is yet to be conducted. Once we have the system designed and engineered, there will be sufficient information to do a CEQA review and a public process that will be involved through that CEQA effort. And there's a schedule that shows that in March we should be ready to conduct that public review process. So that is yet to come. We have not conducted the CEQA process as of yet. And finally, I wanted to clarify the outreach. There has been significant outreach on this project conducted both by the city staff as well as EMWD staff. I won't go through all the different letters and communication, but what I will share with you is that there have been letters transmitted to the property owners on September 28th, on October 11th. There was a town hall meeting on October 13th. There was yet another series of door hangers provided on November 4th. There was yet another letter, certified letter, on November 18th. Another mailer on November 22nd. Another one on the 23rd. So I just wanted to make the point. There has been significant amount of communication and outreach conducted by Eastern, let alone the City Council. So I just wanted to clarify those points. Be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Any additional questions for the General Manager?
Just one question. I understand that annexation fees are eligible to be covered by ARPA. It doesn't mean that in this case they will be, because there's not enough funding for that, correct?
That is correct, Dr. Record. We simply don't have sufficient funding to cover the entire cost of construction, let alone the ARPA funding. I also want to make a point that this program is entirely voluntary. If the property owner does not want to participate through the financing mechanism that Eastern, or at least staff, is recommending for this board, this is not obligatory. This is strictly an opportunity for us to help the community, to streamline the process, and to provide a financing mechanism for the annexation fees and for the connection fees.
Any other questions? Mr. Director Slauson, any questions for the General Manager?
No, I have no questions.
Very good. This time, I will accept a motion and a second to adopt the proposed resolution establishing the Los Alamos Hills Financing Program to finance annexation costs and water service connection fees, and authorizing the General Manager to execute financing agreements on behalf of the district.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Corona, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
And that passes 5-2-0. With that, we will go to the next item on our agenda this morning, which is our executive reports. We will start with the General Manager.
Good morning again, President Pauly, members of the board. Before I review my General Manager's report, I wanted to thank the board for your participation in this morning's employee appreciation event. Thank you for taking part in that. That was very much an opportunity to relay to the entire team our appreciation of the hard work they do every day, and look forward to your participation at lunchtime as well. My report is included in your packet. Wanted to highlight a few items this morning. One is, last week, the State Department of Water Resources declared the initial allocation on the State Water Project, and that was 5%. It's a continuation of the prior 5% allocation for Table A water. It is not a surprise. However, as you're aware, there have been some storms up north and within the Colorado Basin, but we've seen this before. We saw this last year, where December was a record-setting wet year, but yet the following months were record-setting dry months. So we will see how the conditions, water supply conditions, develop further over the next few months. But what this means is that Metropolitan Water District will continue taking health and safety delivery on the state water project for those state water project dependent areas. As you're aware, we are not within that list of agencies. We have access to Colorado River as well as stored water in Diamond Valley Lake. Having said that, conditions on the Colorado River are also becoming more challenging, and to that end, Metropolitan has initiated conversations with both the general managers as well as the board relative to a potential water supply allocation plan for 2023. There's going to be additional conversations at Metropolitan over the next several months if the water supply conditions don't improve. And what I mean by that is if the state water project doesn't reach approximately 18 to 20%, then we will likely have a allocation plan in place. And the schedule currently contemplated by Metropolitan staff is to develop that plan and bring it forward to the board, to the Metropolitan Board for consideration in April of 2023. Along those lines, I've been having conversations with Jolene Walsh, and we're going to schedule Metropolitan staff to come out to this board and share their perspective early next year. We will schedule that presentation by Metropolitan accordingly. Next item is the Doheny desalination, ocean desalination program. As you know, EMWD has entered into a letter of interest with South Coast Water District and MODOC to advance our interest in that effort. Along those lines, I wanted the board to be aware that this week, President Pauly and I signed a letter of support in support of the project as it is being considered by the State Lands Commission. And we highlighted the benefits, the wide-ranging benefits of the project, as well as EMWD's interest in potentially participating. And there will be a hearing on December 9th, and Linnea Alexander will be providing EMWD's comments and support for that project. Next, I wanted to make the board aware that recently several of staff members, including myself, Nick, Linnea, and others, met with the Saboba tribe representatives, and specifically the executive officer at Saboba Tribe. We discussed their long-term sewering needs. They are looking at converting a significant number of residential units from septic to sewer, as well as additional development within tribal lands. What was relayed to us was a decision by the Tribal Council that they want to continue to provide their wastewater to EMWD versus the option of constructing their own wastewater plant. That was a decision that they contemplated, and they relayed to us that they are firmly decided to continue working with us on their additional sewering needs. And they did share with us a master plan that they developed that looks at the built-out conditions for the reservation. So we are going to be working with the tribal staff as well as their consultant to advance an effort which will come before you for consideration. There will be an award of a consultant contract to look at the best way to accommodate the additional sewering needs of the Saboba tribe. So look forward to that partnership and expanding our efforts on that front. Under items of interest to the board, wanted you to be aware that this week we joined with other agencies to provide a comment letter on the proposed Western Riverside National Wildlife Refuge Act. As you're aware, this is a proposed legislation sponsored by Senator Feinstein, and we have been engaged with the senator's office for many months providing our feedback. Recently, we collaborated with Rancho Water District, Western, Elsinore, Orange County Water District, and others to coalesce our comments and feedback, which was provided this week in a letter to the senator's attention. What we're hearing from our folks in D.C. is that it is unlikely that this legislation will move forward during the lame duck session. And so we look forward to engaging not only with Senator Feinstein's office, but with Congressman Calvert's office, who's been very helpful in understanding our concerns as well as others' concerns. So we look forward to further those discussions and providing our comments so we can arrive at a reasonable boundary map for the proposed wildlife refuge area. Finally, under items of interest, I wanted to share with the board that recently the National Association of Clean Water Agencies has announced that Patrick the Pooh educational videos will be recognized and awarded. And this is a whole new level for Patrick. He's now nationally recognized as an award-winning educational campaign. And the conference for NACWA will be in February, and I expect that Patrick may make an appearance to accept the award himself. But with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions for the general manager? Director Slauson, any questions?
No questions.
Very good. Thank you very much. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick?
Nothing today. Thank you.
Anaya, I think you do have something for us.
Yes. Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. This morning, I am very excited to introduce EMWD's new Director of Water Use Efficiency, Ms. Jenna Schimmann. Jenna started her career as a customer service representative, but for the last 16 years has been serving various roles in water use efficiency and conservation, most recently as the conservation manager for Coachella Valley Water District. She brings extensive experience as well as industry participation. She is an American Water Works Association water use efficiency practitioner, certified as a qualified water efficiency landscaper, and again is very active in multiple industry organizations, including the Water Conservation Program Operation and Management Standards Committee, the Cal Nevada Water Management Committee. She's serving on the board of directors for the California Water Efficiency Partnership and is vice president for the California Irrigation Institute. And with that, I'd like to introduce Jenna.
All right. Please come forward. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I'm very excited for this opportunity and to help EMWD however I can, especially in light of what will or will not be a wet water year. So we will see. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Matt, anything for us this morning?
Good morning. Nothing this week.
Very good. With that, we will go to our consent calendar. Do any members of the board want to have a separate vote on any of the items on the consent calendar? Seeing none, I will take a motion, a second. Moved by Director Record, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will now go on to item 6, which is our action calendar for the morning. Item A is to approve and authorize of contracts with Williamson Development Group Incorporated for $328,000, Bay City Electric for $1.7 million, and Cozad and Fox for $112,000 for the district-wide water booster plant improvement project phase one, and an additional appropriation of $2.4 million. Mr. Brown.
Good morning. Before I begin, I'd like to introduce some guests we have today. We have Mike Abdullah from Williamson Development Group.
Thank you for being here.
Steve Mellinger from Bay City Electric Works.
Thank you.
And Brian Fox from Cozad and Fox.
All right. Very good. Thank you for being here this morning. Appreciate it.
So some background on this is in an effort to improve reliability and resiliency and security at districts' remote facilities, we're working on implementing a series of improvements specifically identified booster facilities. So these improvements include emergency standby generator purchase and block wall installation at select facilities. And this effort will be completed over multiple phases. So the photo you see here is a Baylor booster, and this is a typical remote facility that we have. So the boosters that were identified for generator installation were regularly affected by the public safety power shutoff events, and then they were also, it was taken into consideration their water pressure storage zone and how they were impacted by power outages. And then the boosters identified for block wall installations are remote facilities and are in fire-prone areas. And you can see on the map, there's 21 facilities that are affected by this, so we're spread out across the district, and it's quite a few sites. So phase one includes the installation of block walls at two facilities, the purchase of 15 emergency standby generators, and then also site-specific block wall design. And the site-specific block wall design is required due to the terrain of some of those facilities, and Canyon Hydro here is a good example of that. There's slopes away from the top of the property, and we need to make sure those walls are properly designed for when they're installed. So in August, a contract was issued to Tetra Tech for them to design a standard block wall
design for us. And we use that standard block wall to go out for an RFP for the installation of a block wall at two facilities. So we received bids on that, and Williamson Development Group was selected, and they provided the lowest cost and the highest scored proposal. So for the site-specific block wall design, this is going to be at seven facilities. An RFP was issued for engineering services for the design, and submittals were evaluated, and the district selected Cozad and Fox, who provided the lowest cost and highest scored proposal. And Cozad and Fox uses some new technologies that allow them to have a one-person survey crew. They've been a great business for the district, and we're looking forward to get moving on this. And then for in September, we issued a request for bids for the purchase of 15 emergency standby generators, and 24 vendors downloaded the proposals, and then and three submitted, but one was deemed non-responsive. So district staff evaluated the bids, and Bay City Electric Works, who was the lowest cost responsive bidder, was selected. Now, their lead time shows 56 to 58 weeks, but they said they're very conservative on that, and they may be able to get us some of the larger generators earlier, and if that's the case, we're going to work on installing those as we get them. So the next steps, assuming we receive approval today, is in September, we'll be back to seek board authorization for the actual installation of the block walls at the seven facilities for the site-specific design. And then in January of 2024, we'll seek authorization for phase three of the generator installation. And as I said, if we can get them in smaller blocks of five, we're going to do that. So it may be phase one, A, B, C, or we may be doing a little bit different. But that's kind of our goal, is to get them installed as soon as we can to get these improvements going. So the recommendation is for the board to approve a contract with Williamson Development Group, Incorporated, for the installation of block walls at two district facilities in the amount of $328,000. The execution of a contract with Cozad and Fox for site-specific engineering block wall design in the amount of approximately $112,000. The purchase of 15 emergency standby generators with Bay City Electric Works in the amount of approximately $1.7 million. And then additional appropriation in the amount of approximately $2.4 million, which brings the total project appropriation to $2,450,000. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this item?
How big were those generators?
They range, I think our largest, I think it was approximately 400 horsepower. Most of them were on the smaller side of 100 kW to up to 400.
100 kW?
Yeah, so we have most of the smaller ones, yeah.
And they run $100,000 a piece?
No, the smaller ones, like the 100 kW, would be about $72,000, but it is quite a bit more than what we've seen over the 2 years previous.
Okay. Director Slauson, any questions?
No. We heard this in the option engineering. This looks fine.
Good. I'll look for a motion on it. A motion by Director Armstrong. Second by Director Record. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Again, thank you all for attending today. We always appreciate when people we do business with come for the items that are up. Very appreciated. We will move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize procurement of treatment equipment for Calgon Carbon for $8.7 million for the Paris North Basin Groundwater Contamination Prevention and Remediation Program, an additional appropriation of $8.7 million. Mr. Kowalski? Before you begin, Mr. Kowalski, I just want to make note on the previous item today that you were at that hearing that we did on Los Alamos Hills, and you were quite helpful to all the residents there that day that had a lot of questions. So I'm going to make you an honorary member of the PGA team this morning because you did a fantastic job that evening that was sort of outside your scope. But you really helped a lot of those residents understand what it was doing. So I just wanted to acknowledge that while you were up here.
Thank you very much. I look forward to delivering some high-quality water to that neighborhood soon.
Very good. On with your item.
Good morning, President Pauly, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here to present our Paris North Groundwater Program. Before I get started with the presentation, I'd like to introduce a few guests we have today. On the line, we have Charles Drury with Calgon Carbon. Charles, could you say hello? And then we also have Tim Brecky here in the audience with Calgon Carbon. Tim?
Thank you for being here, sir.
And then with Woodard and Curran, we have Mr. Brian Dietrich, our program manager.
Thank you for being here.
So by way of location, the program is located in the cities of Moreno Valley and Paris. It's really situated between March Air Reserve Base and Lake Paris. A quick overview of the program. We look to advance 6 production wells, a centralized treatment plant, the related conveyance facilities, pipelines essentially, and then we'll situate about 16 monitoring wells around the facilities. By way of background, we went out to pre-select a single treatment supplier for all the treatment equipment for the program, and this would reduce the procurement time and then provide a guaranteed price. And back in April of this year, we pre-selected Calgon Carbon for that scope of work. And that scope of work would be for the treatment equipment for the program, including green sand, granular activated carbon, and regenerable ion exchange. And what would occur as a result of that process is we'd have a pre-negotiated package that would be assigned to the general contractors to advance that work. However, at this time, we feel, based on current market conditions, direct purchase of that equipment is more beneficial to the district. And the two key benefits the district has for that is we can, one, immediately advance the fabrication of this treatment equipment to deliver it just in time, concurrent with the advancement of construction. And two, we would avoid costly markups that the general contractors would put on that same equipment. So Calgon's proposals articulated here for the 3 different processes. For green sand, it's approximately $2.8 million. For granular activated carbon equipment, it would be $1.8 million. And ion exchange, about $3.6 million. The total cost for the treatment equipment for the program would be approximately $8.7 million, including sales tax. And by way of schedule, this exhibit shows the program schedule, and there's quite a lot of activities going on concurrently. But the two key activities that will be going on here in the very near future are the bidding activities for the equipping of the production wells and the centralized treatment plant. We look to put that set of documents out here in early 2023 so that we can just-in-time deliver and meet the grant deadline of mid-2025. So with that, our recommendation today is to, one, advance a pre-procurement contract with Calgon Carbon for the treatment equipment for the program for approximately $8.7 million. Our request today is to ask for additional appropriation of approximately $8.8 million, taking the total program to just over $63 million, which is about 50% of the total program cost. With that, I would be happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions on this item?
I will move it.
Moved by Director Corona.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauline?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Again, thank you very much for attending our meeting this morning. I always appreciate it. We will go on to item C, which is to approve and adopt proposed resolution amending the salary schedule of ranges and classification, salary schedule in accordance with the memorandum understanding. Mr. Moata, you're going to present these, and I understand, I know we have a public speaker on this, but we'll have the presentation first.
Great. Thank you, President Pauly. Good morning again, members of the board. The item before you today is a recommendation by staff to approve the cost of living adjustment per the MOU with the labor union that was previously approved by the district. That MOU identifies the CPI index, and specifically the CPI index for San Bernardino, Riverside, and Ontario as the metric that will be used to calculate the cost of living. Using the agreed-upon methodology specified in the MOU and based on the current data released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that calculation is 8.9% cost of living adjustment that would be effective as of January 1st, 2023. The current budget that was approved by the district, effective this current fiscal year, which started last July and extends until the end of June of 2023, had accounted for a 6% cost of living adjustment. Obviously, this is higher than that. It's approximately $1.3 million of unbudgeted increase. Having said that, we currently have about 6.5% vacancies in our staff, and thus the savings realized from the current vacancies will more than offset the additional $1.3 million unbudgeted increase in cost of living. So with that, our recommendation is to move forward with adoption of this cost of living adjustment, but be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Any questions on the item? I know we have one public speaker, Ms. Clayton. Good morning, welcome. Board,
I want to thank you from the IBEW 1436 membership for considering this cost of living increase. I'm Robin Clayton, the business manager president. I also have Brian Raines, who is my vice president. And we just want to thank you sincerely for taking this into consideration. We have a lot of hardworking employees. And with the economy the way it is right now and Social Security up to 8.7, we would sincerely appreciate this, and it would go a long way. So thank you for this time.
Thank you for your comments. With that, I'll look for a motion.
Can I make a comment first?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is kind of on the heels of our morning breakfast and our lunch, and I just want to say that, and to all of your members, I mean, this is a really great team of employees and professionals and trades here at Eastern Municipal Water District doing a tremendous job, and so I just want to say thanks and say thank you to everybody for the hard work that they do. And I support this. I think this is the right index to use, and we have an MOU, and I would make a recommendation to approve it.
A motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. With that, before we go on to item D, why don't we take about a 4 or 5 minute break? All right. We will reconvene. We're going to go to item 6D, which is to approve and adopt the 2023 legislative policy principles and priorities. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I believe Jolene Walsh is online as well, and she'll be giving the first portion of this presentation.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. This morning, Pakal and I have the honor of presenting to you a few items. The legislative annual report, a map depicting the new political landscape within EMWD's service area post-elections, as well as the proposed legislative policy principles and priorities for this coming year. We greatly appreciate the opportunity to have an in-depth conversation with you regarding our legislative agenda in October. We heard your feedback and incorporated it into the draft of the principles and priorities that are before you today for consideration. Before I launch into the presentation, I want to thank each of you for your input and engagement in our legislative program. Our elected representatives, As our elected representatives, you all truly provide the influence that's needed for a successful legislative program. So thank you for that. Next slide, please. Here we go. Before you today is a hard copy of EMWD's 2022 annual legislative report. This document chronicles our activities and our accomplishments on both the state and federal side throughout 2022. We shared many of the highlights that are in the report at our special board workshops, so we won't repeat the details, but I do encourage you to thumb through the booklet. Pakal and I prepared the content. However, April's public affairs team, particularly Joyce and Aaron, did all the heavy lifting to make it such a professional production. So kudos to them. Next slide, please. And one more. All right. Next, we wanted to take a couple moments to share with you the new landscape in terms of our political representation. To start with our political representation, we are fortunate that none of our members changed as a result of the elections, but with redistricting, you'll see that some of the boundaries did shift, leaving us generally with less of Representative Calvert's 41st Congressional District and slightly more representation by Takano Ruiz as well as ISA. And with that, I'd like to pass the presentation over to Pakal, who will share the other two slides as well as the policy principles and the priorities. But before I pass it over, I do want to acknowledge Pakal for really stepping up this year and taking on the state legislative program. It's a huge program, but he's been a really quick study, and he's taken it over with grace and definitely ease. So with that, please continue, Pakal.
Thank you very much, Jolene. So this map here indicates our state Senate representation going into 2023. You will see some familiar faces. Senator Richard Roth will stick around for a couple of years. Now, Senator Kelly Sayardo has transitioned over from the Assembly. We anticipate that he'll retain a lot of the staff that he had there, which is great for us. We've been able to form a lot of great relationships with them here in the district and in Sacramento. And the 19th Senate District is a bit of an anomaly. The way that the redistricting process works and how it coincides with the state Senate elections, there actually isn't currently an official who is elected to represent the 19th Senate District. And the way that the legislature compensates for that is they will assign a legislator to sort of oversee that area and assist with constituent casework and other sort of other matters of representation. And so because Senator Ochoa Bogue has served that area, we anticipate that she will continue to serve in that capacity until the 2024 election. Our state assembly representation is where we start to see quite a bit of change. With the exception of Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia, this will be a brand new freshman class of assembly members. As you can see in the top right corner of our service area, there hasn't been a winner declared for the 47th Assembly District. As of last night, that race is essentially at 50-50, with those candidates being within 100 votes of each other. So we anticipate that there will be some ballot curing and perhaps a runoff. And as we get more information on how they proceed with that, we will keep you informed. So now I'd like to jump into the policy principles overview and the updates that we have made since we held the legislative workshop in October. And again, I'd just like to take a minute to thank this board and our staff for providing us with some really valuable feedback in how we draft those documents and for also participating in that workshop. It plays a really key role in how we strategize our advocacy efforts for the upcoming years. So here we have our four overarching legislative principles. During the workshop, we spent a bit of time discussing the second core principle there, the second column from the left. We had initially proposed that that principle be conservation and sustainability. After receiving some feedback from Director Armstrong and from others, we decided that it would be most appropriate to shorten that to sustainability, and we could still use that overarching policy to sort of drive our advocacy as we deploy strategies and advocate for policies that promote climate and water resilience. The other three columns there have not changed since the workshop. And so this is essentially how we plan on using that core policy of sustainability to drive our advocacy. We want to make sure that we are promoting policies that focus on sustainability and resiliency. And so that could mean securing resources to promote resiliency in times of increased climate uncertainty. We want to make sure that we are still bringing back state and federal dollars to assist with the implementation of the state's near and long-term climate goals. And we want to make sure that we're advocating for new water to meet the demand and growth of our region. And as I said earlier, we discontinued the use of the word conservation as part of that overarching policy. So these are the legislative priorities that we identified for 2023. I won't spend too much time as the list hasn't also changed since our workshop. I just quickly wanted to note that we are still focused on a legislative proposal with CSDA to address teleconferencing provisions within the Brown Act. It's still undergoing CSDA's internal review process, and we anticipate that as activity picks up in Sacramento next month and as the CSDA State Legislative Committee begins to hold their regular meetings, we'll have a more thorough update to provide to you. And so with that, the staff recommendation this morning is to adopt the 2023 legislative policy principles and 2023 legislative priorities. And Jolene and I are here to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for board members?
Just a comment. I mean, I think you guys do a really great job. I know it's a team effort, and I know that you guys include other parts of the district. It's not just, but, you know, Joe talked this morning about the amount of dollars you've got in grants. It's pretty impressive. So it looks good to me. I'd certainly move adoption of this and keep up the good work.
Second by Director Armstrong. So a motion by Director Record, second by Director Armstrong. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-0. Thank you very much. We'll move on to our informational items, and we are going to get a report, Mr. Adams, on inflationary impacts update.
Yes. Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. So this morning's presentation is really to provide the board an update on the inflation, the impacts from current inflationary environment. So just wanted to provide that update to the board and get this rolling. Here we go. So just quickly, certainly the board is more than aware of the significant increase that we've seen in inflation within the economy, certainly coming out of the pandemic, the impacts on the supply chain, and then the increase in demand as the economy sort of opened up again. Certainly the U.S. and specifically the Fed have been trying to deal with that inflation, increasing the Fed rate, which has had an impact on interest rates. That graph on the bottom is to show you that we are at a 40-year high on inflation. And so it was when I was in grade school that inflation was at that level of over 8%. The number I'm showing you is September, 8.2%. October at the national level was 7.7%. And I think the current projection is to continue a slight decline at 7.4%. But again, really a 40-year high on inflation. We haven't seen this in a long time. If you go back and look over last, really the last couple decades, it has ranged in that 2-3% area. So, the focus today was just to provide the board an update, and staff has been really focused on this and specifically the impacts that we've seen over the past, 18 months. We did provide a board an update back in November of last year. If you recall, great presentation on the supply chain and the impacts that we were seeing, the additional lead times, the increases in our transportation freight costs really had significant impacts that we started seeing back then. Then as part of the mid-cycle budget update that we did back in June, part of that analysis in the spring was to really say, okay, what costs are we seeing? Where are these cost increases? Certainly we saw it in fuel, energy, chemicals, made pretty significant adjustments in that budget that started this past July 1st. And then recently back in October, certainly with the continued increase at the Fed, we provided impact on that on both our interest income, our investment income, and our debt specifically to variable rate. So, you know, provide that in, that information to the board, but really highlight the fact that for last year, last 12 months, we had really strong financial performance for the district. So, Joe had mentioned earlier the local index that, for Riverside, San Bernardino, Ontario. This is actually a relatively newer index. It was broken, I think, in 2018, 2017, but really want to show you since September, 3 years ago, where that index has. And certainly prior to the pandemic, you know, inflation really ranged between 2 and 3%. You can see in May or March, right before the pandemic, May had a decline down to 1%, was relatively flat up until last January, and then really you can see the increases that have occurred. It really peaked out, at least locally, almost 10% in May, and then it has been trending down. But still, you know, this is the index that governs the cost of living adjustment. You can see it in September was 8.4%. The blue line is, you know, less energy and food. So certainly everything across the board has seen increases. One of the other indexes we use is the Engineer News Record. And this is important for a couple things. One, it's one of the indexes we use when we're projecting out costs for a capital budget. Certainly when you have $100 million a year, $500, $600 million a year, this has significant impact on where you're estimating costs to be. So the green line is really the materials certainly peaked out last year at 37%, and then more recently almost 20%. Building costs continue also to increase, but if you look at the bottom, which is the overall construction cost, last year 8.4%, and that's how we adjusted rates last year, and then 5.7% for FPCs. And that's another thing. We use the ENR to adjust our connection fees every September, which the board did last month. So last year it was higher, this year 5.7, but still pretty significant from that perspective. So I have a couple graphs just to talk about construction costs. And this one, you know, I know there's a lot of lines here. I think the really ones I want to focus on was steel at 124% since the start of the pandemic back in April of 2020. And then lumber is another one that has significant increases of over 60%. And then transportation, 40%. So certainly across the board, those inputs for construction all have shown significant increases. And this one really, the blue line is the inputs. So I showed you the increases in costs. The red line is the inputs. The blue is how bids have been coming in. And so, you know, I think initially when we saw some of the cost increases, bids still were coming in favorably. Certainly, some of the more recent bids are significantly higher than engineers' estimates, but ultimately, bid prices are starting to catch up to sort of those inputs for those material costs. So these next few slides are really specific to EMWD, and you know, I just want to thank staff for providing a lot of this information. And you know, it's sort of alarming when you see some of these increases, and certainly the board is more than aware of them when we talk about sodium hypochlorite that was just approved by the board just last month. You see polymer increase, citric acid, all increases across the board. I mean, even 14% on salt is a significant increase from that perspective. But you can see across the board we're seeing significant increases on our chemical costs. And this is just one example when you compare it to, you know, really those agreements that were back in 2020, 2021. And then the new prices based on current negotiations. So this one is on our fleet costs. You know, we have seen it both on the purchase of vehicles and the actual fuel costs for operating those vehicles. Just a note, because of the lead times and stuff, Fleet has done really an amazing job to get all the bids and orders for this fiscal year, and really did that within the first couple months of the year in trying to get those vehicles in place this fiscal year. And you can see that note. I mean, there are some vehicles that we're seeing delays over 12 months. On the vehicle side, you know, whether it's a half-ton pickup at a 48% increase or three-quarter ton, which is 33, even Class 5 vehicles, 10% increase. So really increases across the board in comparison to what we saw back in 2020. And then the bottom table really just shows you how fuel has changed. Of course, this is a September 22 number. You know, fuel prices have gone down, But you can see back during the pandemic, fuel was right around $2.30 for both gas and diesel, and literally has increased over 100% since then. And you can see the budgets right there. So Mr. Brown mentioned the project earlier with generators and the cost, and he provided this great table just to show, back in July when they were getting pricing for a 100 kW generator, what the cost was in the lead time at $25,000 with a 10 to 12 week lead time. Now, and he mentioned it today, the price is $72,000 with what you saw is at a 56 to 58 week lead time. So significant increases in that area as well. As you know, we have a significant inventory for daily operations, and really just highlighted a few key elements or key inventory pieces just to give you a sense of the increases that we've seen. As mentioned, lead times continue to increase. Staff has done a great job in getting spares of critical parts and even doing additional ordering and identifying additional suppliers. But just look at the hydrant from 1,300 up to 38, 189% increase. Copper has seen an increase as well. And then just for a meter valve, that 80% or that 80% increase from 75 to 135. And then just, we talked about labor earlier, but, these are really our outside services, professional services. So, in every aspect on the professional side, especially for engineering, you're seeing increases in those professional services on geotech, inspector field, tech 15%, field survey, whether it's a surveyor, two-man crew, or project engineer, seeing other increases. Reasonable from that aspect, but we hadn't seen these type of increases for a while. Just a few others I want to highlight. Certainly prevailing wage, with our construction contracts adjusted twice a year, recent increases at 5.4 for electrical and 8.9 for laborers. Biosolids, there was even a discussion recently on biosolids. We are seeing increases there. You see at 14 and 30%. Certainly, that was information from about 2 months ago, and certainly working through that as we speak. And then really one of the large areas that we've seen significant increases on are on energy costs. And just highlighting, that's a large portion of our budget. You're going from $14 million up to $23 million over a two-year period. So 40 to 42% electrical and natural gas is over 236%. So very significant from that perspective. One of the things we did focus on at the budget discussion when we were talking about the increases is really the mitigation and the focus that staff has done, and just highlighting really those continued mitigation efforts that we're trying to do, whether it is looking at our treatment processes and evaluating alternative chemicals. On the budget impact, staff is very focused on controlling costs and monitoring those expenses. Talk about lead times, getting alternative vendors, and making sure that we have critical supply, critical spares. And then on the CIP, really, the CIP is really an evolving plan that continues to be refined as costs come in and things are being moved around. So, as we're seeing increases out there in the bid environment, we're really rethinking on some of these projects and looking at phasing and timing of those projects. So this is really setting us up. I mean, from this aspect of doing the analysis, we do have, I just saw first quarter financial reports, which look at least currently to be trending with the budget that we currently have. I'm really going to be focusing on the second quarter financials, which will close at the end of this month. We'll provide an update to the board in March. But we do have a two-year budget process coming up, including a cost of service study. A lot of the costs that we're seeing now and the current budget will be that baseline for the establishment of the rates and our budget for the next two-year cycle. So this is really the schedule that we'll be back in front of the board over the next 6 months starting in January. And with that, I do want to thank Matt Melendrez, Dan Howell, and Dave Brown for a lot of the information and a lot of thoughts that they have provided in this presentation. Really couldn't do it without their help. So with that, I'm available for any questions.
So I'll start out here. You know, obviously, you can see the numbers. We are in a good financial position here. But at what point, I mean, do you see us at some point, besides potential rates, of having to take other actions? I mean, we just did an 8% increase on wages today, which, you know, is, again, I want to honor all our contracts. But at some point, if this continues, we're going to have to make some tough decisions. Is that what you're kind of telling us, or?
Well, I'm not saying tough decision. I think, as you mentioned, we're in strong financial position. I think we have reserves, and actually we have rate stabilization reserves that will help sort of mitigate that, at least the initial impacts. We will have to raise rates to cover operating costs. I would expect, you know, if you remember, last year we did rate increases of 1.8%, and that was based on really a low inflationary environment. Our costs had been flat. This year we're doing a 3.8 in January, but when you talk about some of these cost increases, you know, we're going to have to adjust rates accordingly. But with the reserves and some of the other things, we should be able to weather that from that perspective. I think the other thing is capital and some of these larger costs. We'll look to sort of be very strategic on when we're doing them and phase them in an appropriate manner based on the resources that we have. Okay. And maybe if Joe wanted to make any additional comments.
No, I think you covered it well, John. I would just add that it is challenging conditions that we're dealing with financially in terms of the inflationary impacts. But the good news is that this organization and this board has made, over the number of years, sound financial policy decisions. And thus, we've positioned the organization to be able to mitigate the impact of the inflationary pressures that we're seeing. Meaning, as John mentioned, we have a very strong financial position with the reserves we have. One of the unknowns that as we continue further discussions on the cost of service is whether these inflationary impacts are temporary or permanent. Clearly, you know, when you see certain chemicals doubling in cost, you know, is that truly going to continue on a permanent basis, or once the chain of supply issues hopefully resolve themselves, there will be some sort of downward adjustment. Given the uncertainties, my discussions with Laura and John is that as we have our cost of service scenario planning, we're going to present a scenario to the board where potentially these inflationary pressures may be temporary, we'll see. But in that case, we may want to consider leveraging our rate stabilization reserve to get us through a period of uncertainty. And at a later time, once we have better understanding of where the long-term permanent cost increases, then at that point, you know, we and with your direction, we can consider other rate adjustments. But that's the thinking going on. This is how all this information ultimately is going to factor into the discussions that we're having with the board on our cost of service for the next biannual budget.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments?
Good report.
And good report. Director Slauson, any comments?
No. Okay. It's really alarming. I guess that's the only thing I would say. But yes, I appreciate the presentation, it sounds like we're well suited to face this inflationary rate.
No, again, great report, great information. Thank you very much, John, for doing that for us. I think helpful. All right, we'll go on to item 8, which is to receive and file various reports. I'll make the motion to do so.
Second.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote on that, please?
Pauline?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Our calendar review. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. We're going to begin on page 2 on the current board members' master calendar over the next 2 weeks. If you would please review that information and let me know if you have any changes or updates to those events that are listed. And then on the top of page 3 is the upcoming events and conferences. Next Friday, December 16th, EMWD is hosting the Water Education Poster Judging Contest here in the boardroom. And then on Friday, January 27th, is the Moreno Valley Chamber of Commerce Installation Awards Banquet. So information flyers for those are at the back of your packet.
Could you put me down? I've been told I'm a pretty good poster judger, so.
I have you and Director Armstrong attending.
Very good.
So continuing down on page 3 is the board and board committee meetings scheduled through February. Please note that on Wednesday, January 18th, the Board of Directors meeting has been extended for the cost of service session. And then next Monday, December 12th, is the Administrative Committee meeting, has been moved to the 12th at 7:30 in the morning. So all other board and committee meetings through February are on schedule. And at the top of page 4 is the interagency scheduled through February. Also, please note that the December Elsinore Valley joint meeting has been moved to January 23rd. So, and lastly, EMWD's offices will be closed on December 26th, January 2nd, and January 16th in observation of upcoming holidays. So, are there any questions regarding the calendar review? That concludes my report. Thank you.
Very good. We will go through director's attendance report. Director Armstrong.
I attended the Aqua Conference and got to say it started with a really wonderful dinner. Thank you to our legal counsel for, you know, hosting that. But also at the conference, I participated in the CalDESAL Executive Board meeting, which was held Wednesday morning. But it was a really good conference. I thought some of the sessions were really good. I attended one on the federal water status with representatives from the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and Department of Interior, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Water and Science, who we had out here not too long ago. And so, not anything new to report there, but just kind of confirming the status of things. And also intended a California water supply strategy update on the governor's water supply strategy from representatives from the state and how they feel like they're doing with that. So those were all good. Also attended the Region 9 meeting for Aqua and thought it was really good at that meeting. Director Harvey Ryan from Elsinore Valley shared with the region our efforts between Eastern and Western and Elsinore and Rancho to kind of look at regional resiliency. And so I thought that was a good item to share there with everybody as well. But that was a good conference. I also attended the Retirement Trust Committee meeting as well. And thought that was a good meeting. The markets are tough on everything today, but thought one item that was really interesting is that we have a benchmark that our portfolio is geared to achieve, and we're actually doing better than our benchmark, even though things are not as good as we would hope they are. The other good news, though, is our OPEB fund is still more than 100% funded, so we're still in good shape there. But anyways,
all right.
Those are my updates.
Thank you so much, Director Corona.
Yes, I did not attend the Student of the Month meeting. Had my meeting with the general manager, which is always a good meeting, and I attended the Aqua Conference. It was the first time I'd been to Aqua in a really long time, and I got to talk to a lot of old friends, and I did attend the Region 9 meeting. It's surprising how involved the local water districts are involved in that, as opposed to some of the larger water districts in the area that probably should be involved, but they're not. It's crazy, but it just shows the leadership that's going on in our neck of the woods. And attended the great dinner that was put on by our legal team, and that's all I have.
All right, very good. Thank you. I was not able to attend IE Works Board meeting or the Western Municipal Water District joint meeting. I did have a meeting with Menifee Mayor Bill Zimmerman, who had reached out and wanted to talk to me just about general ideas on growth in our service area. I did not able to attend the Hemet San Jacinto Board meeting. As stated, Aqua was good. Hit a couple of the good seminars and conferences, and as already stated, a lot of good networking and reach out. And then Western Riverside Council of Governments, we this month had various reports from different agencies, some new members coming on after the elections on that. And that's my report, Director Record.
So Joint Inland and Orange County Caucus, a review of Met Agenda, which is a good meeting, and it's good to see where other people are coming from a lot of times. Standing Committee and Board Meetings, kind of quiet. I did elect Fong Sakai from San Diego as Executive Board Secretary, which is interesting. San Diego doesn't usually make a lot of get a lot of election wins, so good for her. Monthly standing committee meetings, there were none for November 22nd. That was they typically don't have the end of the month meetings, November or December. Diamond Valley Lake MOI meeting, I did not attend that. And monthly update with general managers, find those very helpful. Association of California Water Agencies Fall Conference, I thought it was good. One thing that I thought was interesting is that I attended a state water contractors meeting one morning, and Carla Nemeth was there. She gave a report and said that she was very pleased that DWR got a CEQA exemption to do habitat restoration. And I made the point later that it's, I mean, I guess it's California, but it's kind of an oxymoron here. We're so happy we got an exemption from CEQA so that we can do restoration. And to me, it's just an indication of how hard it is to make any progress to do what needs to be done. Attended a lot of other meetings. That Tuesday morning, the Ag Committee and the Groundwater Committee meetings were very good, very well attended. Thought it was interesting that in the Ag Committee meeting, they had an economist make a presentation who was hired by someone in the Central Valley, and I couldn't believe the number of times that he brought up Metropolitan Water District. And I think it's just the importance of their participation in major infrastructure projects, and they probably really don't happen without Met being there. So, you know, it's going to be interesting with the new change in leadership at Metropolitan on where things go. So we'll it should be interesting. But I thought it was a good conference, and had a lot of good meetings with a lot of people. Yesterday, the UCR Water Seminar Series, it was Joe and Adele from Met and myself, and I thought it was good. Those guys did presentations on the two districts, and I was just kind of an overview. And it was a good meeting. It's a lot of students that seemed to be very interested, so that was good.
Very good. Thank you for that. And Director Slauson.
Thank you. Yeah, I attended the meeting with our joint meeting with Western Municipal Water District. We discussed issues of, you know, joint concern, among other things, the Paris North and possible cooperation to provide sewer on Cahalco Road. I thought that was thoughtful and a good thing to pursue. I attended the Chamber of Commerce. It was actually a director's meeting, and we discussed budget and sponsorships. As you may know, EMWD sponsors a breakfast once a year to the Chamber. And attended SOPA yesterday. And only thing of note was the approval for an agreement with Accent Computer Solutions to provide information technology services. So that's it.
Very good. Thank you for that. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items?
Yeah, I have some. And part of my report on the UCR yesterday, I was going to point out that I was the only one that got heckled by the audience, you know, and I'm the only, like, volunteer there. So I thought that was interesting, but I did get through the the presentation. I really don't. I don't think it was personal, but
you handled it well, Director Record.
So, but I was doing a little research for my presentation, very little, and I told Joe that what I wanted to do was let them present, and then I would just give an overall big picture perspective, partly because of my fortunate participation in AQUA over the last several years and met in Eastern, but and I've said this before, but I'm just really impressed with everything that we do at Eastern. It started a long time ago, and I think that we need to continue, but I think there's some real opportunities out there. I mean, I looked at the wetlands at the San Jacinto Regional Recycling Plant. That was started in the 90s, and now today that's what everybody wants to do. And with the federal government throwing money out there as fast as they can, there's opportunities there for getting some payments for carbon sequestration, I believe. The San Jacinto Wildlife Area, I mean, we partnered with, it was then Fish and Game, now Fish and Wildlife, in the 80s to build that pipeline down the Ramona Expressway. And I don't know if it's still true, but that's like the only wildlife area that survives because of recycled water. And I think there's probably some tremendous opportunities there for the same thing, to partner with the state and try to get, if not money, at least some credit for that. You know, everything we've done in solar, we're so far ahead, and I'm sure there's agencies that are going to try to get to where we are just to access this funding. And a lot of times, you know, you punish the good guys who've already done it and don't give them anything. But I just want to make sure, and maybe, I don't know that we need one person to manage that, but, you know, when you look at how effective we are in getting grants, I think there's a lot of opportunity to do things we're already doing. You know, and just the fact that we're one of the few agencies that recycles all their water, it's pretty phenomenal. So maybe we could have a discussion about that at the next planning committee.
Sure.
Just to see how we can, you know, because I've known about this stuff forever, but I, you know, haven't really thought about it, and we don't talk about it that much, but it's really pretty phenomenal what we do here, and the leadership and the vision that the guys way before us had. So that's my comment.
Well, thank you. Anybody else? Director Slauson?
No, I have no comments.
Very good. I understand we have no need for closed session.
Closed session.
Very good. But before we adjourn, I wanted to note that recently the EMWD family suffered a loss with the passing of Oscar Tolentino. Oscar worked at EMWD for the past 18 years and played an important role in the maintenance and operations planner and scheduler too. So I'd like to ask the board if today we could adjourn in Oscar's memory. And with that, we will stand adjourned until, I believe, December 14th.
21st.
I apologize. Very good. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.